And welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. I think I've covered the entire day and the 24 hours thereof. And welcome to the Higher Dimensions on BBS Radio. I'm your hostess, Phyllis Pricer, and I want to wish you all a very happy Easter, a wonderful Passover, and whatever other holiday I might be missing in this. And I'm so glad to welcome today a very special guest, Dr. John Turner, who is talking to us from Hawaii. Welcome,
Dr. Good morning, Turner. And happy Easter, Phyllis, and to everyone listening.
Thank you. Dr. Turner is a neurologist, and he's written a book called Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. And I just want to know where you were, Doctor, last summer, when I was talking to neurologists at Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital, and wanted to convince them that this is the way to go, and couldn't find anybody.
Well, you may have had trouble with neurologists. I'm actually a neurosurgeon, Phyllis,
neurosurgeon,
so I may
right.
have understood a little easier, perhaps.
You might. Okay, well, who knows? They all seem to be a little stiff in the upper lip now and again.
I understand.
I'm sure you do. At any rate, Dr. Turner wrote about his journey, his personal journey, his professional journey, in moving through traditional medicine. And then, I guess, Spirit's taken you on what we call our journey on the path to spirituality, which takes us from what we all know and most of us grew up with and moved you into the spiritual aspect of healing and alternate ways of healing using non-traditional methods and how they've worked for him and the synchronicity of it all as he has looked for, I guess, your spiritual path in life and what you're supposed to be doing. Is that correct?
That's correct as far as this book is concerned.
Okay.
And I'd like to mention that for a long time I've heard variations of the quote attributed to Pierre Duchardin that we are not human beings on a spiritual journey.
Right.
We are spiritual beings on a human journey. And I think point was driven home to me after completion of this book when I started a new phase of spiritual awakening.
Yes,
it's the human journey we're here for, and
understanding
of that is important.
Well, yes, it is, actually. We are here to grow and to utilize. I'm very much a student of Edgar Cayce. I'm reading a great book now. I can't even remember the author. Forgive me, I'm still a little fuzzy. If I sound a little funny or start coughing, ladies and gentlemen and Dr. John, please forgive me because I am coming out of a cold again. I seem to be blessed this particular season with numerous colds and stuff, which tells me I'm not being careful and not taking care of myself. So I am working on behaving. I shouldn't say working. I am joyfully looking into how to take care of myself better. But what I'd like to do is explore with you what you have gone through, because it sounds like the journey of every man, and it's just different because it's an acknowledgement from someone in the medical healthcare field, in the traditional medicine field, who is willing to at least open up and explore and look at things when so many people sort of, I would say, shut off their hearing aid, as I call it, or poke their head in the sand and don't want to look at alternatives, although I've read something very interesting recently in the Jinshin Jitsu, and I know you're familiar with that, Doctor, from Scottsdale, Arizona, the book, headquarters, that in the United States, as of 2006, 2007, only 26% of the hospitals in the United States had some form of alternative therapy somewhere in their practice or curriculum or whatever. Practice or curriculum, what else could it be? And as of 2008, it moved up to 32%. So we're slowly moving ahead.
Yes, and I'm glad to see that, too. And many medical schools now have a Department of Integral Medicine. So it's really an exciting time to be talking about this, Phyllis.
Yes, and please tell us somewhat about your journey and how it got started.
Well, first of all, Phyllis, you may call me Jack. That's
okay,
my nickname.
Jack.
I'd appreciate it. And it began with the Edgar Cayce that you mentioned, and I don't think we'd be talking had I not been handed the book, The Sleeping Prophet, while at the time I was in graduate school in physics, and I don't know to this day who gave me that book, but it was by Jess Stern, about the life of Edgar Cayce, And it's one of those books, I'm sure you've had the books where you turn around and read it again from cover to cover, and then things change.
Yes.
And to me, I said, this world of metaphysics or the spiritual world is really fascinating. I couldn't believe that a man could sit down, go into a trance state, and download this information and have a cure rate that was reported to be as high as 85% using natural medical cures, and also, very importantly, working with the karmic aspect of the dis-ease.
Right.
And that changed everything. I can't explain exactly the mechanism, but right away I decided that the physics and quantum mechanics was getting boring.
Uh-huh.
Rather than get a PhD in physics, I said, let me get a medical degree and see if I can learn about the mind. And that's how it began, Phyllis, many years ago.
So you went into the organic portion of the mind rather than the emotional psychiatric, I guess.
I had planned to go into psychiatry.
Uh-huh.
My mother was the first African-American woman to receive her PhD in psychology at Ohio State.
Wow.
And actually, she begged me not to go into psychiatry.
Why?
She thought that I could do better in a different field, that she felt that psychiatrists did not get the respect that they really deserved, and that I could do better without prescribing medications, and I could learn the mind in some other way.
Huh.
And for the first half of medical school, I did a research project with the Department of Psychiatry, and I tell you, in my rotation as a medical student in psychiatry, I did the best, received honors, but it was a very difficult job. And just when I thought that maybe this isn't what I want to do in my life, neurosurgery popped up, and the next thing you know, I was offered a spot in the training program at Ohio State, and the rest was designed to get me to Hilo, Hawaii, where I am to this
day. Wow. You know, this is, when you fall into your path, your true path, you're led, whether you believe it or not, sometimes dragged by the hair of the head, kicking and screaming, but more nicely if you allow yourself to be led.
Yes, ma'am, and you mentioned synchronicities, and I used to think that's what it was, but now my outlook, my viewpoint is that this is all part of the plan unfolding, and once I woke up to that, then it's like watching pieces of a puzzle fit together for a stage play that's designed expressly for the person. And then there are no more coincidences, no more synchronicities. It's all designed to be that way, and it's really perfect.
Well, I guess I was just thinking more along the lines of Jung's definition of synchronicity. Not so much random, but as things coming together purposefully.
Yes, I understand. I agree with that completely.
Okay, because I think that's true, that when we are ready, then what we have agreed to do in another time and another place, which I firmly believe there is, then we move forward. And we are helped a lot, a great deal. But when we stray off the path, it seems like the brakes are applied. Or, you know, we realize there's maybe some refining that's needed, as I call it, refining, and where we need to become more, we ask, to fulfill the highest level, because I think there's not only just one path we can follow, but several. Most of it is supposed to be in service to mankind, beginning, end, and okay. But we have several ways we can do that. We can either choose the highest, in my opinion, route, or we can choose another one that is not quite as ambitious, shall we say. I don't want to say high, but perhaps ambitious might be a word. And that as a result, it's our choices along the way, each and every step of the way, that chooses for us the path that we will follow. And we have a choice each and every day to continue to follow along that path or not. But that's been sort of my experience. If I get off the path, man de loo, it's like I'm running to a brick wall.
I understand. Well, if I may quote from a book, Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady, one sentence says, service is the fuel that lights our lamps.
Right.
And I think that's quite true. I look back at my mother's life. She spent the last 5 years with us in Hawaii.
Oh,
and
nice.
She died a year ago at age 99, but very peacefully in her sleep during the last 3 weeks. She slept her way to the next level. And as I reflected on her life, I realized she was always taking time to stop and help anyone in need, and often without their having to ask.
Right.
And I think that's why she enjoyed such a long life, a relatively free of any disease except for Alzheimer's at the very end, which most of us may get. The risk of getting Alzheimer's at age 65 is 62% at age 80.
Really?
Yeah, at age 85 it goes up, and it goes up from there. Now new things are on the horizon, so this can change.
Wow.
And if you don't mind, while we're on the subject, I want to mention one important thing, that research has shown that as humans and even animals manufacture new brain cells constantly, and they're formed in the area of the temporal lobe called the hippocampus.
Right.
And they stay around a few weeks, but if they're not put into use, they disappear. This is a constant process. So we've got to use our brains. We've got to continually be stimulated. And I noticed this is what she always did, too. She always kept active mentally and physically, and that's very important.
That's interesting, too, because my mother died at 87 and a half from a a massive heart attack. Apparently, we don't know, but she did die in my arms. I was glad to be there when she did. At least she waited until I was home on the weekend. And she died in my arms, and she had never wanted to go to a nursing home. She had never wanted to be helpless, as it were. And she also did. She did a lot of volunteer work after she gave up her career of 40 years. And she was always mentally active and stimulated. She helped me with my business. And she always gave of herself, and everybody just loved her. And people would call her mom who weren't even related, and which is a sign of respect in many ways. And she went the way she wanted to, quickly, within half an hour. She died in my arms after suffering a massive heart attack on the kitchen floor.
Now, what a blessing it was to be there with your mother. And I think about this a lot, the same thing with me, and how fortunate we were to be able to do that. Most people don't have that luxury to be able to be around during this time. So we were both very fortunate.
Well, it was, and I saw her, I've said this online before, I saw her soul leave her body. And I saw her soul, I watched it walk out the back door of the kitchen, up the back garden steps, and into the light. And I knew she'd gone, but just in case, you know, heaven wasn't what it was cracked up to be, I started doing CPR. And, you know, I know people laugh, but, you know, you can always change your mind.
No, I understand.
But I told her I would let her go, which was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. Before she left, I told her if it was her time to go, I would understand she could go. It would be hard for me, but it was okay for her to leave. And I could feel her smile, and I could see her leave. So I was very blessed in that. And then I did CPR like a banshee, just in case she wanted to come back. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have a live soul, a live body for her to come back to. So, you know, there are things that we can do. She did not come back, however, needless to say. But at least I felt I did what I could, and I knew my mother died with loving arms around her. I mean, I should be so blessed.
Well, you know, Phyllis, I'd like to ask you, and I know you're not feeling well to do a lot of talking, but this is certainly interesting. You saw the soul leaving, and I've been involved with a lot of life and death and so forth. My question is, have you been in touch with her by any means since her death?
Sure.
I'd like to hear about that, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Well, my expectation was that I would see her in dreams, okay? That was one of my, and I did not for a long time. My other expectation, since I do communicate with those who passed on, I mean, sometimes people just appear in front of me and give me a message, or I just catch them, you know, wandering around, like go, just, it just happens, okay? So I had the expectation that I would see my mother, because I believe it so strongly. Well, I didn't, and this bothered me until one time I was with a group, it had to be a year and a half, maybe 2 years after mother passed, and that was in 99, so this is like 2001. We were together meditating, and in the meditation, I saw light coming towards me. You know, like you would look at the stars in heaven, and you see stars? I saw three lights heading towards me. The one in the center seemed familiar, and when I got close enough, I recognized my mother. I recognized her light, not her face, not her features. Okay? I saw her as a soul, as a light. And she came close, and she was dancing, and I could feel the happiness and the joy. Excuse me if I get a little emotional at this point. I felt the happiness and the joy from her, that she was happy, that all was well. And I was comforted by that. And I thought, well, whatever she had been doing, because I was so secure in knowing she had gone on and she was okay, that maybe it wasn't, quote-unquote, necessary for me to have a visit from her as I had expected. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes perfect sense.
Okay. And since that time, I have caught glimpses of her. I have felt her around me, advising me at times, or giving me warnings. And other people have claimed to have seen my mother, by the way, out in the house of the country where we lived, working in the garden because she loved the garden. And I planted a rose garden, and some people come by and say they still see my mother, and they have to do a double take, working in the garden.
I understand. And, you know, I've been researching a little bit about spirit apparitions, and
uh-huh.
sometimes they're wispy and transparent, but other times they're fully formed, just like you're looking at that person.
Right.
And this is how they've seen your mother appear.
Yes, yes.
Yes, that's quite interesting.
Yes.
And also it's interesting that you, as a clairvoyant, are able to have this kind of contact, whereas I'm sort of on the technical side, I guess, with the physics background. I've had recent experience with death and contact with someone after death, but
uh-huh.
It's more in the form of instrumental transcommunication. I don't know if you've ever had any interest in that.
Define that for me, I might not know.
I hope you don't mind getting on this subject.
Not at all.
This is my personal interest right now.
That's quite all right. And anybody wants to call in and talk about this, or a comment, or bring in something they experience, please feel free to call in. I just need to throw that out, that people can call in and talk about this or comment. Okay, go ahead.
What number would they call, Phyllis?
That would be 1-877-876-5227.
All right. Let me begin by saying what happened. I have a website to promote my book.
Okay.
And the man who did this website for me was a great friend of mine. We had been in touch almost daily on the internet when he lived in St. Louis area, and then he moved back home to London. But we were always in touch.
Uh-huh.
And when he knew about this book, he knew about remote viewing. He also learned remote viewing. That's how I met him. We both had an interest.
Oh, okay.
But he was a computer expert, and
okay.
he agreed to do the website for me to promote the book.
Okay.
And we started on it way ahead of time of the publication of the book, and it's really an excellent website because
okay.
he's such a genius. But what happened was this. In November of last year, I received a communication, an email from a man named Rob in Australia, who said, "Doctor, I've seen your book, and I'd like to put it on our forum. We have an EVP forum. Is that familiar to you, Phyllis? EVP?
No.
For electronic voice phenomena."
Oh.
And
okay.
I had remembered a little bit about this with that movie way back in 2000 called Frequency. I don't know if you remember
I
that.
Heard about it, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And I had seen it back then, but I really wasn't paying attention because
right,
I
right.
it was a good movie at
yes.
that time. But I said, yes, I'd like to know more about this, and I went to the forum, and I started reading about EVP and how transmissions can come through electronic devices. And
okay.
I said to my friend Martin, I said, "Look, Martin, I think I'd like to do a little research in this area. Would you be interested in doing this with me? It's kind of interesting." And he said,
uh-huh.
"Absolutely." Well, then he developed a strange pain, abdominal pain.
Ah.
And it progressed, and within 2 months, it led to the diagnosis of terminal cancer, from the colon, metastatic to the liver.
Oh, no.
And he passed on February 7th of this year, and I was there in London at his side with his family. And very interesting things happened. But the day before he transitioned, I said, "Martin, now, as far as this EVP and research, are you still interested?" And he looked at me and he said, "Absolutely."
Uh-huh.
Well, when I returned home, something in me changed, too. I mean, I had reached a different level of understanding.
Right.
And I was telling someone yesterday, there was a book signing here in Hilo. I saw so many kind people that came. And I was trying to explain what happened to me in London. And I said, I think it's when I bent over the bed and kissed my friend on his forehead.
Yeah.
A goodbye kiss, that something in me changed.
Yeah.
When I got back to home, to Hilo, Hawaii, I came across something called radio sweeping. And usually with this electronic voice phenomena, you turn on a digital recorder nowadays instead of a tape recorder, and
right.
you try to ask these questions, and later you go back to analyze the tape. But there was a way people saw that you could take an inexpensive radio from Radio Shack, $25
right.
radio, open it up and clip a particular wire, and it makes it into a sweeping device that rapidly sweeps the frequencies.
Huh.
And as I did that, I put the device back together, and I had the digital recorder right on the table, and I turned it on, and I said, well, let me see how this works. And I said, Martin, are you there? And within 2 seconds, a voice came back clear as a bell that said, hello, in his exact intonation with his British accent. And playing that for his family, they say this is chilling, because that is exactly the way he would answer someone.
Uh-huh.
And so now, in my book, I have an example of how remote viewing can lead to the diagnosis of medical problems. But now people are using this radio sweeping technique as a real-time way to try to obtain information on medical cures also. So to me, this is fascinating. And the Australian EVP Society and the American is a place where people can obtain this information.
Oh, okay.
And on my website, if you do a search, there's a search feature for the word ghost. You'll see exactly how to do this hacking of the Radio Shack and information about how I felt that Martin contacted me right away.
Wow.
Yes.
And I probably did. My feeling is that you are absolutely correct on that one. It's funny because way back when, I would occasionally, and Edgar Casey had told us of this, I would occasionally get a telephone call in the middle of the night. And I'd wake up and I'd go racing to the phone and nothing and no one would be there. And he likened that to being called upon by your higher self to respond to duty or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it was a call from your higher self reaching through your subconscious and causing something around you to manifest itself like a phone ring. I had a friend of mine who was awakened, and her energies were such that she started popping light bulbs all down, up and down the street until she adjusted to it. And she couldn't keep on another friend who cannot keep on a watch at all because it just goes haywire.
No, I understand. I've heard about people like this. I have never met any, but I certainly am familiar with that phenomenon.
Yeah. And I said, well, it must be really rough if you can't keep light bulbs around. I'd have a hard time reading in the dark myself, and I have a passion for reading.
No, I understand.
But, this notation, there are those who say they write through computers, that they can be, they can sit down and do what we call automatic writing.
Yes, ma'am. I understand that one, too.
Okay. And that's not one of my talents.
Well, not one of mine either, but the computer did start me on this book project by a computerized version of the I Ching. And, things like that and the Celtic runes have always fascinated me. And
yes.
I remember that you said you might be able to run the tarot during this conversation.
Oh, I'd have to run downstairs
and
get it.
Maybe another time.
Maybe we could do it another time.
Yeah, those things have always interested me.
Yes.
And all that all works.
Yes. I have runes also, which I just love. I have a set that are very unique. They're carved from pieces of crystal with the runes on them that I've gotten. And a long time ago, the artist moved to Chicago, and I don't know where he is now, but he did a beautiful set at one point. What I was so interested in your book is the number of things that you looked into from the healing standpoint. That's what I was fascinated with, that someone with traditional would know about, as you mentioned, Jinshin Jitsu, which I have mentioned on the show before, and I've had people who are teach it and who are specialized in it. I think these different healing modalities are absolutely phenomenal. And I wanted to explore your desires in that field as well. Because it's something that you have incorporated into your practice.
Yes, ma'am, and I've kind of been a jack of all trades in the metaphysical area. But that book, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations, is about the different spiritual pathways that I tried, for that apex of the tree of life, so to speak.
Right.
And only in retrospect can I now try to analyze what I went through and what I was looking for. And it turns out that the path I was seeking is actually everyday life is the path.
Right.
And although these are interesting experiences, I found now that what I need to do is to try to be constantly in the moment.
Yes.
And to try to reach that point of understanding and accepting unconditional love. That's
yes.
where I think we're all headed.
Yes.
Now, as far as the healing, you know, I'm trying to do a second book project on universal energy, whatever that is, and what allows us to connect with it, what allows you to connect with it in your type of work,
yes.
And in the Jinshin Jitsu. And interestingly enough, the word in Japanese, Shinjin Jitsu, a kind of a modification,
right.
Is a word that Mokichi Okada, the man who became enlightened to the point where he received this inner light that helped him with healing,
uh-huh.
Described that point as being like at the vertex of a pyramid where you can easily see in all directions at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that he was aware of the past, present, and future. And he had
right.
A Satori-like event on a mountain, just like Dr. Usui yes. Had for Reiki. And it's yes. All a way to get in touch with this pervasive energy that's always with us.
Right.
Some people, as you know, call it zero-point field.
Yes.
Others call it perhaps God energy. There's all kind of names
right.
For it, but maybe
right.
It's the creator is the best name. But here's the thing, Phyllis, that I'm dealing with now. If we think about the origin of everything, and we take everything back to a singularity which scientists are calling the Big Bang, right?
Right.
And that as a result of this event, which was a rapid expansion of space and the beginning of time,
right.
That all the forces we know and all the particles we know came as a result of that instant.
Right.
Right? If we accept that fact, it seems to me that it means before this, there was absolutely nothing.
Uh-huh.
And everything came from that. Well, whatever this higher power is also came from that. Nevertheless, we may not know the reason and how, but it's there, and we can tap it. And now we're scientifically looking at how. We know that the body emits light from all the cells,
right.
But especially from the hands, Phyllis.
Right.
And from the hands, the fingers more than the palms, and the
yes.
Fingernails more than the fingers.
And now, that's interesting.
It is, because scientific knowledge now is showing this, because with the advent of astronomy, and fortunately on the Big Island of Hawaii, where all those telescopes
oh,
are,
yeah.
They're using these sensitive instruments, but single photon detectors can detect this light in the form of particles. You know, light exists as particles or
right.
Waves until you
right.
Interact with it, but it's from the hands. And for healing in this Jinshin Jitsu that you practice,
right.
These, I believe there, I don't know that much about it, but these energy locks, these points.
Yes.
Where this flow is done, and as I've
yes.
Read about this after I met you, Phyllis, it's like jump-starting with a battery. And
right.
I wanted to ask you when we're on this, does this drain your energy to do this
no.
Practice?
No.
Not at all.
Actually, so, what I find when I do channeling,
uh-huh.
When I do Jinshin Jitsu, when I do any of this, I simply open, consciously know that whatever it is working through me, and it is not I myself. As a result, I feel like I am like an electric wire that has a negative and a positive. You have a switch or a plug on one side, and you have a light bulb on the other, and the wire that connects. And all I do is allow this energy to run through me. In fact, when I'm done with channeling sessions, which I do, and when I'm done with readings, and when I'm done with that, I have more energy than I did when I started. It takes me a while to come down, as I say.
So when you practice this, Phyllis, and I think this is a good point to discuss, are you
yes.
Putting any intention into the healing,
yes.
Or are you merely letting it flow through?
No,
you?
I put the intent that the healing, the energy, will go wherever it's needed, and I am only there as an instrument. And my intent and focus is that to do good. That's it.
Well, I tell you what, that brings up a very interesting point of discussion.
Okay.
Now, by any chance, have you heard the word spindrift before?
Yes, I have.
Wow. So then, are you familiar with the Klingbeil's research in healing?
No.
They were a father and son team, Christian scientists, that wanted to scientifically study the power of prayer.
Okay.
And that word spindrift stands for that misty stuff that's thrown off when a wave breaks, that fine mist
okay.
In the air, or when wind-driven snow kind of blows into the air.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. That's what I know it to be.
Okay, well, they called their research spindrift, and in an excellent book by William Sweet called A Journey into Prayer, I found something out after writing this book that explains the introductory chapter. And I don't know if you recall that first chapter where I had a case of intraoperative bleeding that
yes.
I couldn't stop.
Right.
And people have heard that expression, let go and let God.
Yes.
Right. Well, this was a case when I was trying to do everything myself and it didn't work.
Right.
But in order to save this woman's life, when I couldn't stop the bleeding after working for a total of 8 hours, I said a prayer. And in that prayer, I said, this higher power, call it God or whatever, I need help. I need to tap into it and stop this bleeding. And I was very specific with it, Phyllis. You know, and it worked. It stopped. And I added a second prayer saying, well, now let her come out of this whole situation in the best possible way, which is kind of like what you do with your work. You let this energy flow to where it has to go. Now, the Klingbeils would have called that a non-goal-directed type of prayer, meaning it's a thy will be done type of approach. Whereas the other directed prayer, they found in experimenting, for example, with soybeans, they could stress out these beans, like withholding water, to put them in a stressful situation. And then they prayed for a group with this specific goal-directed prayer, you know, may these things grow strong and high and thick and all that. But the second group that did even better was the group where it was non-goal-directed, where they said, here is the force, here is the power, let thy will be done for you. And that's how this healing seems to take place, too. And it's all a form of giving. And because we're giving, you're giving when you do this work, and physicians are giving, and people are giving when they help other people.
Absolutely.
So it's all related. And this thy will be done thing is a very powerful thing.
It is. And I'm delighted with that. You know, the NIH is doing studies with prayer and the efficacy of prayer on people who are ill. And those who are prayed for, and they're finding that there is definitely a difference. But science always wants, you know, more proof and more proof and more proof, you know, which is okay and so forth. But sometimes, you know, I also have found that when, if I have, for example, a selfish interest, and I'm not really wholeheartedly into what I'm doing, it may not work as well. It may not work at all.
But it must be rare for you to have a selfish interest, Phyllis. You sound like a person who would rarely get into that.
Well, yeah. I rarely do. If I'm praying for something to come through in business, for example, okay, now I may not get what I want, okay, and I've learned never force it because, boy, am I sorry. I have found that, you know, if I put a thy will be done on business as well, eventually it turns out well. I may not be a happy camper, but I do find out in the analysis that it did work out better than it should, than I would have thought it would, or it didn't come through because there was something wrong with whatever it was, whether it was a contract or something else. And I said, thank God I didn't get it because that could have been me, you know, with a problem rather than somebody else who got it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And you know, so many things you're saying are great for discussion, and I know our time is a little limited, but it's, but gee, I'd like to go into many of these things with you.
I'd love to, anytime.
Energy and the universe and how this all works. For example, well, you know, to me, I'm interested in the theory of parallel universes, and there's been a lot of talk about that through the years, right?
Have you, let me stop here, have you ever read Dolores Cannon's trilogy? Have you ever heard of Dolores Cannon?
I may have. What is the trilogy called?
It's her books on Nostradamus. Okay.
No, I have. I'm not familiar with those.
Okay. She is a very, very well-known, at least in our part of the world, hypnotherapist. Okay. I've heard her speak. She is a woman who's done a lot of this, and she talks about past lives and everything else. Her book on Nostradamus is absolutely phenomenal. She has three subject matters on it. She has a number of books out. Look her up and get her books. You can get it from, and this is for any of our listeners, on Amazon or wherever. In Borders Books, you can order them. Let's see, Universal, the Universal Consciousness.
Yes, I'm looking at that now, Conversations with Nostradamus.
Yes, and Universal, consciousness as well. You will, it will knock your socks off because she talks about parallel universes. She talks about all of this stuff. Okay?
Well, see, I'll make it a point to do that because I'm certainly
her books you will find absolutely fascinating. And a lot of it has explored people when they are, as was Edgar Cayce, in an unconscious state. When they were in a state of hypnosis. and some of the most amazing things have occurred. And I have read all of her books. In fact, I have all her books occasionally. I reread them. Her Universal Consciousness books 1 and 2, and I think she's got 3 out, and I haven't been able to find it yet. But I'm eager to read it, and I read it, and I say, I knew this, I knew that, and I think you'll see the same thing when you read it.
Okay, I'll make it a point to do that.
Okay, but as this is, if you're going to go into this, this is where you should go.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
And just, and this is for our listeners as well, because it's so phenomenal. But go ahead. I am so fascinated with what you were talking about. Go ahead.
Okay, well, as a physicist, the theory of parallel universes was ascribed by the Copenhagen physicists, and
uh-huh.
when Fred Alan Wolf wrote his book about it called Parallel Universes, I tell you, I used to purchase that book and give it to my friends whenever this topic came up,
uh-huh.
because one way to look at this is that whenever there's a decision to make, when there's a fork in the road, as you can well imagine, there's
right.
an infinite number of possibilities when we
right.
think we're going to decide something.
Right.
But the theory is not that these are all potential possibilities, but they all spring into existence in an infinite number of parallel worlds that actually take place.
Yes.
So when you mention this, I will be done as far as business goes and all that, and sometimes people say, be careful what you wish for, you may just get it.
Yes.
I've always wondered, what happens when this goes on? Are we moving into another parallel universe, and when we wake up in the morning, are we waking up into a slightly altered universe that we kind of wish to be in and so forth?
It was described to me, you can tell, and I know when I've been slipped into a parallel universe and back again.
Tell me about that.
Again, this should be found by reading, and it at least it answered me, my questions, about how we knew. When you are, when you know you're going into a parallel universe, when you've encountered something that you're familiar with, say, let me just use something from my own life. I lived in the country for a number of years in Flint Hill, Virginia, and I just loved it. And I remember that one day, I was heading to work early in the morning, and the sunrise was spectacular. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with art, but the school of the Belgian masters, the Flemish painters, all have a kind of a golden glow to their pastoral scenes. It's hard to describe really unless you see it, but everything seems to have a golden glow as though it's been brushed with gold like paint. And it's just outstanding, and people talked about how that was the Flemish school. And I remember one morning going to work, and I looked at the hills, and everything seemed to be painted with this particular golden glow. What I didn't see was a tree that I usually saw there. And I kind of wondered about it at the time, but was so taken up with the magnificence of the colors, it just felt different. I felt as though I were transported to another place, which made no sense because here I am going to work, right? Should have been very prosaic. And so it was a nice sunrise. Who doesn't see nice sunrises? But I looked and looked, and for a little while it did, and then when I looked back, I looked back and I didn't see it any longer. Parallel universes open up for when there's a particular juncture in time and a particular grid juncture, they call it now, rather, because time is not as we understand it to be. Anyway, a particular juncture. And energy grids. And when that happens, when there's that synchronistic meeting of the two paths, that's when you have a crossing from one dimension to the other. There is a parallel universe. It's only slightly different than the universe we live in.
Now, let me ask you this. Is this something you jump back and forth, or do you stay in that one for a while? In other words, that
it can be for a few seconds, and it seldom goes more than for a day or two. Very seldom.
Then, at another point, Phyllis, that tree was back in the picture.
Yes, when I came back home, the tree was there.
That's really interesting.
Okay.
And the fact that you can be aware of that.
Yeah. But it may be, the parallel universe is so close that you're not really, it's something that's insignificant, usually. It's not like, you know, you go and all of a sudden there's an escaping hole in the ground or there's a block of buildings that no longer exist. It might be that you'll walk into a place and people don't recognize you. And you'll say, good morning, so-and-so, and they say, my name isn't that, it's something else. And you'll wonder, you know, you wonder if you've lost your mind. There is this feeling of unreality about it. Just a feeling, and or somebody might walk up to you, and you're walking down the street, and you're not recognizing people, and someone will come by and say hello and call you by a different name, and you're thinking, what? And you'll turn and look at them, that type of thing.
So
it's just something slightly out of sync.
Yeah, I mentioned something, a substance called dimethyltryptamine.
Yes.
In my book, and a Dr. Rick Strassman and his book about this chemical being produced by the pineal gland is his theory.
Uh-huh.
Because in that area of the brain, which is, you know, near the center of the brain, so to speak, there's spinal fluid circulating in that area. And if this chemical was released into that, it could explain these bright light experiences people have near death and so forth. And it's strange that at 49 days gestation, when the sexual organs are made manifest, that's when the pineal gland also forms.
Mm-hmm.
But in his experiments with human volunteers, using that chemical intravenously, it transports the person almost instantaneously to a parallel universe.
Uh-huh.
Now, they vary in the extent of what they're like when they get there. Some could be quite frightening, but it's a way of exploring the inner space of the mind, and I highly recommend his books on this work.
Huh.
Now, I wonder if, when this happened to you, if a neuroscientist was to look at this and look at it from a scientific aspect, would they say, have you transported yourself into that inner space by some type of brain chemical release?
I wouldn't have thought so, because it would have had to have been something completely and totally spontaneous, unknown to me and beyond my understanding at the time. And a few times since then, I have had this transport. Once, back with a few months ago, with a friend of mine, when we went up to Front Royal, Virginia on a day trip. It would be very strange, wouldn't it, for two separate people to have that same spontaneous situation hit at the same time, wouldn't you think?
Well, yes, I'd have
to agree
with that.
Because my friend started, Phyllis, look at the colors. And I was driving. She was, of course, the passenger. And I said, yes. And she said, oh, I've never seen colors. And she's going on. I said, Pat, you're in a parallel universe. Enjoy it. And she stopped. She said, what do you mean? I said, take note of what you're saying. Something that is normal and ordinary. And she's an artist, by the way. So she is very sensitive to the things that go around her. Okay? She's got an eye for things, as I would say. And she said she had never seen colors like that. And as we went by, I said, now take tiny details of it. When we went back, the colors were not the same, according to her artist's eye, when we came back later that day.
You know, Whitley Strieber describes an incident when he was driving with a friend's child, and they suddenly were in an unknown space and time, and they both witnessed it and so forth. And also, people like Dr. Raymond Moody, who said that others attending the death of someone will also maybe experience some of those portals into the near-death experience. So perhaps it's not that unusual that simultaneously people can have the same experience, and it still may be related to happening with the brain chemical, because if you think about it, Phyllis, everything we see, touch, or feel is a manifestation of energy, and it's all really created by our brain in a tremendous process of rendering this as real for us. And
my only question would be is, why then would there be something physiologically different in the scenery? For example, a tree missing, or people that you don't know greeting you by name, and you do not know them, or vice versa.
Okay,
I agree. And they wouldn't know you.
Yeah, I agree. It is kind of a parallel universe, but it could be that this universe exists in the mind, and you're transported there, and things are just slightly altered, and you can notice that if you're very sharp and acute.
Yeah.
Now, this may happen to us all the time, and we're just not sharp enough to notice it. Or
that's
if we
true. That's
do,
a
we
possibility.
Might say, oh, I guess my memory's slipping or something, but maybe it's not that. Maybe it happens all the time, constantly, to all of us.
I think I've heard of people who move back and forth from one dimension to another, and sometimes that's kind of tricky because the other dimension seems to be a lot nicer place to be, apparently, at least for most people. Now, if you say somebody goes to a place that's awful, I would say that is a place that they go to within their own fears that they have created. That's my opinion.
I mention that because one of his subjects, Dr. Strassman's subjects, was taken immediately to a place where he was being raped by two crocodile-like creatures.
My feeling is he was experiencing a former lifetime that was extremely traumatic.
Well, I think it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And crocodiles are not my favorite creatures. I have a healthy respect for them. But yes, I understand that. My feeling is that he moved into a different universe, literally.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And if he may have experienced a parallel life where that was happening to him. What I had trouble believing was that we live more than one lifetime at a time. That's something that was really difficult for me to come to grips with.
And you came across this where?
Oh, golly. God, it's been so long. Well, I had first a friend of mine who is a gifted psychic. Wilma Fredericks told me about living parallel lives, or living more than one lifetime at a time, that we live multiple lives. And we could be here on this earth plane now, and another part, you could be a doctor where you are now, and another one might be a child in Somalia, or it might be as a child in England growing up, or it might be in South America or someplace else.
Well, you know, we talked about the parallel universes,
yes.
So it stands to reason that, yes, we're living all these lifetimes, all these parallel lifetimes. There's a Phyllis Pricer and a Jack Turner talking on the phone, but maybe, you know, instead of a cup of coffee here on the desk, it's a cup of tea. But all these things go on. And, you know, it's a rare individual that can, you know, walk among these, and this is of interest to most people now who are studying this. How does this take place, and should it? But I tell you,
Well, I would say if it takes place, should it, it's a moot point. It just is.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just being less scientific than I should be on this, because I am a girl who tried so hard to do great experiments. You know, when you were in school, you tried the Marconi experiment. I think I was the only person in class who couldn't get that damn thing to work.
Yeah, I understand.
I had a hard time striking a match and getting matches to light. So, you know, science is not my best thing, but I understand concepts. That's a funny thing.
But don't forget, there's a Phyllis Pricer somewhere who is a scientist.
Probably a real metal giant.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting.
But the parallel universes that exist, my feeling is we can meet them and greet them. In meditation, we go to multiple levels, okay? We go to different levels when we meditate, you know? And that's why focusing is so important, where the injunction in almost any study for meditation and prayer is to train the mind, to teach the mind to release all the stuff that runs around in the mind. And I don't know about you, but when I try to meditate, first thing my mind does is say, "Oh boy, holiday," and immediately goes to anything and everything it could possibly think of to distract me, and. It's difficult sometimes to train your mind, but when you do great work.
Well, you know, that's a question that came up recently. Someone asked me about meditation and do I practice meditation. And I tell you, I had tried, like most people who don't stick with it, try to empty their mind, but I found I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm constantly thinking of things all the time. And then it occurred to me that perhaps the best meditation, in my case, is to try just to be completely aware and in the moment, from moment to moment,
that's good.
As best as I can. And therefore, rather than stopping this flood of information, I try to be involved in it. And things that may be painful or hurt, I try to experience that just like the good things. And this is all part of life. And the Buddhists who say once you put your foot on the path is to finish the path, I think they're referring to the fact that our path is everyday life.
It is.
That's it. Yeah.
It's It's we're here to learn and to serve. As I said, it boils down to this, to know, to love, to serve the Lord our God. And who is God but we ourselves? And with all our hearts, with all our mind, with all our soul, and our neighbor is ourselves. And that's the whole law. And we are here to serve. And if we do that, things come so much more simply and easily and smoothly, and you can, it's almost like living a magical life.
It certainly is. It certainly is. It's, and in my case, I was just slow to waking up. It took me some time. I was so involved in technical things that I kind of ignored the spiritual aspect of life. But luckily, I had the chance to experience it.
Well, it wasn't luck. It was your time. You agreed to this ahead of time, and you agreed to move into it because you had to move through certain phases in order to reach that point, that juncture, when it would be appropriate for you to move forward in this. If it was too soon, you would have picked it up maybe and dropped it.
Well, Phyllis, that's exactly the conclusion of my book, that there is a spiritual world where we help craft the plan for our next incarnation.
Oh, yes.
We come here with the slate wiped clean so we can learn these lessons, and
yes,
it's all directed to this shining perfection of the spirit and this,
yes,
reaching that point of unconditional love. And
absolutely,
it takes some time. I mean, at least I can say I think I'm started on the right right idea here, and it may be a long time before I reach that point. But I want to mention The, yes, Education of Oversoul 7. Are you familiar with that book by Jane Roberts?
No, but go ahead. There's a lot,
yeah,
I don't
as you
know.
Remember, she used to channel the entity Seth.
Yes, okay, yes. I,
yeah,
remember. That's what I know her from.
And okay, then she wrote the books about Oversoul 7, the education of and the future education of Oversoul 7. And at first, I thought this was her foray into fiction. But no. After I read those books, I realized this may be how it works when we reach that point. What is the next step if there is a higher level than unconditional love? What may it be? And these books describe what it could be, that our job then is to assist others through their dreams,
yes,
to reach that point. And I would highly recommend those books to someone interested in this in past. Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I do know that once we leave this earth plane, we do continue to work, you see. It's not, what is the old expression, all 10-cent cigars and 5-cent beers?
Or
the other way around. And sitting in a willow tree and playing a harp. Actually, from what I understand, and are you familiar with Dr. I think his name. I took it. Life Between Lives?
I think
Dr. McCreary, something like that. I'll think of it at 9, you know, 4 in the morning or something.
Yeah, but Life Between Lives, I'm not familiar. But what? Go ahead.
But the bottom line is that when we leave this earth plane, we immediately go to where we review how we've done, how we've carried out our mission, the plan, what we decided we were going to do, whether or not we did it, where we grew, where we failed, you know, and just a critical view. And you are the one who does the review, and you do it before a board. Then you go to your soul groups, as it were, because we, each of us, are on our journey, and we have friends that cheer us on. And when we move forward into this, we then shear off. We have a resting station because those lives that have been physically traumatic and emotionally traumatic for us, there needs to be some healing work done.
Well, could you be talking about Robert Schwartz? I have a book in my hand called Courageous Souls. Do we plan our life challenges before birth?
That's he, but, and yes, he, it's along the same lines, but this is a course that I've taken.
Oh, and hypnosis,
yes.
Okay, understand what you're talking about there.
And it is phenomenal, and you can explore, and I help people explore their own past lives and between lives. And it is phenomenal because you remember. I mean, I remembered a lot. In fact, I had dreams before I even took this about pre-birth issues, and it kind of explained a whole group of stuff to me when I finally went through between lives. And but the thing is, we do plan our own lives, we do plan our sessions, and when we go into that, we then go back and plan more, and we go places in between lives, whether we help other people, where we continue to study, where we go to other worlds, other dimensions, other universes, planets, if you will, to study and learn more so that when we choose, should we choose to go back to Earth to finish our cycles there, to literally, if we go back to the Bible, to do what the injunction was, which is to be the master of the Earth plane, which is what Adam and Eve were supposed to do, right? To be the master of Earth itself. That's what they were put there for. And I can't think of the right biblical word right now. Sorry, sometimes my mind just sort of shuts down. Age creeping up now and again. At any rate, we are there to become masters over, have dominion over life on this earth plane. And as we do that, we grow in grace and beauty. And when we have reached that level, where we have dominion really over ourselves, because that's what we're doing, we're getting dominion over ourselves, then we can then move on and move into a higher level where we do assist others, where we become angels to others, or guardians, or mentors.
Well, try that book, Phyllis.
Sure.
You know, in the book, it's about a masculine type of spirit being tested by a feminine, higher level spirit, and how he does by guiding the lives of five individuals in different time periods through their dreams.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're going to find it not only very entertaining, but also as a possible explanation to how things may work. I mean, for me, with Richard Bach's book, the Jonathan Livingston Siegel, that finally made me start thinking, wow, this is how it might work. So I would recommend that to you, Phyllis.
Well, that's a very, very wonderful possibility. I'll be glad to look into it. And as I said, I'll look up the name of that Dr. Life Between Lives and recommend his book to you on the email. How's that?
Yeah, that fellow, you know what, when you mentioned it, I did look it up to see who he was, and it has to do with the hypnotherapy.
Yes.
And his name was Michael Newton.
That's it,
Michael. Life Between Lives. Yeah,
yes,
that's very
Michael
interesting
Newton.
Stuff.
Yes, that's
so I'm going to look into that too, Phyllis.
You've read that?
No, I haven't read it. I just heard about it when you mentioned it. But during the time we were talking, I checked it out, and that's what it's about. So it sounds like an interesting thing.
It is. You'll find hypnosis most powerful if you've not used it before.
I've not used it. My mother did, and as a child, she was a child psychologist. And I don't know if she used it on me or not, maybe without my knowing. But she was always talking about hypnotherapy and the things that she has practiced. So I'm kind of familiar with it, yes.
Oh, yes, good. Well, I didn't realize it, but I was able to do that as a child. I just didn't know what I was doing.
I see. That website, by the way, for him is spiritualregression.org. Spiritualregression.org.
Okay. Yes. I will look at it. The other thing is, we need to sign off now. We've made our time. I cannot believe it.
Yeah, it went so fast, Phyllis. We'll have to do this again.
We shall. I will talk to you. I will send you an email. And thank you so much. Thank you all so very much for listening in. We will talk to you next week. God bless you all again. Happy Easter.
And
Michael,
happy Easter.
Where can people contact you if they need to?
JohnLTurner.com.
Okay. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye.